Welcome to Salam Nerds Podcast. We do recaps, reviews, and breakdowns of your favorite TV shows and movies.
Yo, 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 it's the Salam Nerds. My name is Gene, a.k.a. Watson Heath. I'm here with my boy, Chad.
We are an inclusive podcast that focuses on the voices that are ignored. We are all nerds here. Thank you to all our supporters. Like, comment, share, subscribe, and give us a good review.
Yo, 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 Salam Nerds. It's your boy Neves, aka Watch with Neves. I'm here with my co-host Jazz, aka Jazzy Circus.
Jazzy Circus? You know what? I accept it.
Let's do it.
Andy, oh my God.
The man brought it. The man brought it. Right?
Oh, that speech.
Ooh, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But before we do, we want to introduce our guest. So this is somebody who we found in the comments. So listen, guys, if you are watching our show on YouTube and you're in the comment section and you're throwing out zingers and jokes and comments, we might just bring you on because that's what we did with Pat. Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here. I am so glad I found you guys through JJ.
And yeah.
It's been great listening to your podcast and listening to you guys talk. It's been great.
It's been awesome, man. I remember us doing some, whatchamacallit, videos with JJ, and you're just throwing out some fire jokes, some fire content. Oh, my God.
Just left and right. I was like, oh, my God, who is this guy?
No pressure, though, because now you got to do it on the show.
I know.
Bring that same level of wit on the show. Oh, man, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a TikTok Star Wars creator. So I go as a screen name, sir. That's my app for TikTok. At St. Pat Separatist Rebel.
Cool.
And I Separatist Rebel because one, I love Rogue One, one of my favorite movies. Stuff. And I'm what I call a Separatist apologizer because I'm a history teacher, and I got my background in Egyptology instead of the ancient Near East, and so I'm all about disseminating political philosophies and political ideologies and powers within society. And so I come up with a thing like, if you look at the point of view of just ideology, the separatists were right, but taking out of the context that Papalty manipulated everything and led all the pressures up to the separatist ideology, that's a whole other thing. But within the context of just being a person in Star Wars and you have the Republican separatists, from just the political side of view, point of view, the separatists had were the correct ideology in my point of view.
Okay. I kind of want to go into this. I kind of want to know more.
And that's why I love Rogue One a lot, because Cassian Andor has loose ties with the separatists, and he says he's been in this fight since he was 6-9 years old. And I love that because the majority, if you look at a political landscape of this Galactic Civil War, the Imperial area of control and Imperial forces and Imperial majority is the core worlds. Everyone else is the Outer Rim. And that's where did the Separatists have holds? The Separatist worlds were the Outer Rim. And they were, train of thought. Okay. So, and they're a huge chunk of the rebellion are worlds that were separatist worlds, and they got folded into the rebellion because it's the same fight. It's the exact same thing that they saw the Empire as when it was still the Galactic Republic.
Right.
And they're saying that this is where it's going, so we're getting out of here because it's harming our people. So, that's what we're going to do. So they left from the political, just the political perspective, taking out the context of the Sith and the dark side and Palpatine.
So who are some famous separatist characters that we know of?
Well, Cassian has a tie-in. And then in the show they mentioned a separatist leader when you when Luthen was talking with Saw. So that's a big one. We don't really have
Krieger, right?
Yeah, Krieger. We don't have that solid connection between the formation, the end of the separatists, and the formation of the rebellion. And this is why I'm loving this show, because you're getting those little tie-ins. Like the separatists, they still exist, because after the Clone Wars ended, the Imperials went on a war of reconquest, reconquesting and bringing all the separatist worlds, trying to bring all the separatist worlds back and fold. And we see that in the Bad Batch season one, where we go to Raxus, which was the capital planet.
Oh, that's right. We do.
Of the separatist alliance. So it's also interesting if you think it, because all these mid-rim and outer-rim territories, planets that were part of the Republic, were planets that had been colonized in previous centuries by inner worlds. And so they're alien species or barren planets that were settled by things and then emitted into the Republic that way. And through
That's a lot of stuff right there. Wow. Okay. All right. I'm going to go have to watch Bad Batch again, and I'm hopefully we get to see more of Krieger, because I feel like that's coming up. So I'm really excited to see him.
I feel like Krieger, I don't think we're going to see Krieger, because Luthien is offering him up to the sacrifice.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, we still might get a glimpse of him, but let's start this show off with the bang, because this show just started off with crazy. We see Andy Serkis' character, and he is still a little hesitant, and he's still like processing like what happened. And he's like, fuck it. We're doing it live. And like he kind of like agrees in the last episode, but like, he's like, okay, I'll help. But then he's also like, no, we got to do this now. Like, it's tomorrow. It's like, there's no time to waste. And that's where we get this like sense of doom, and there's like a time limit, which kind of makes like the stakes higher, which I thought was really, really cool. And then we get the prison break. Jazz, what are your thoughts about the prison break?
Oof. So what I love about this show is we know what's going to happen with Rogue One,
right?
And we know how it's all eventually going to lead to Cassian and just one other guy here, like how they're going to become rebel allies. Seeing them go from just being in prison to becoming rebel leaders eventually, like, this show is showing us the beauty of how a rebellion can start, and how it's, you know, to quote Cassian, you know, rebellions are built on hope, right?
Right.
You see them build this whole thing up here with this prison break. I mean, it's just beautiful. Like, this episode should get an Emmy, quite frankly.
I agree. It gave me some Michael Scofield vibes when he's out there with the plumbing and bringing the water. I thought that was really cool. It was definitely exciting. What about you, Pat?
Oh, I love Andy Serkis and character and Cassian's Andor's chemistry and the relationship that they have had through this like mini arc within the episodes, because they go from being like, he's this high like authority figure within the level, and Cassian is just trying to keep his head down away from him, to like they're becoming like acquaintances, and now Cassian is being his right-hand man and helping him lead a prison break. And it's so great, because like, Cassian is the one that's giving his character the hope to break out, and the fire to break out. And like, and we've known that like, Cassian's had this plan since like Star Forming, since he got in.
He's been
working at that pipe. He's figured out how to short circuit the system, but like, he knows he can't be the face, or he doesn't trust himself to be the face. So he goes with the guy who's already has the authority and the respect of leadership on the level.
Yeah. This is a callback to Rogue One as well, where I believe it was Jane Erso who also said, you know, rebellions are built on hope.
Yeah.
And so you see both Cassian and Andy Serkis' character and Jayne Erso both like call back to what Cassian was saying. And so it's like, it's a really cool way they're tying all this together.
It's really interesting because we definitely get to see Cassian Andor's character, right? Like, he in the beginning, he doesn't care about anybody. He doesn't have hope. He doesn't have anything, right? And then he gets with the people of Aldani, and then he gets like this glimmer of hope and what could happen. And then he actually learns to act as a team, because he's always solo. He's never doing everything by himself. And then we see him become part of a team, and he uses all of that stuff in the prison break, how to be a team, how to do his like ingenuity, but also how to inspire people, right? And he really got that from working together in his little little team that he had. And I thought it's really cool the way that brought together. And then we see Andy Serkis' speech. Bro, this is one of the best speeches in Star Wars.
Of all time. And like, don't just forget Star Wars. It's ever.
My favorite part of that speech is that anytime like he didn't know what to say, he would look over at Cassian, and Cassian would give him a nod of encouragement. Like, you can do this. Just keep going. You do this all the time.
You know what I love about that? Usually people just give off a great speech off the top of the dome. Andy Serkis starts off a little rough, and then he goes like, is that the best you got? Give me more. Like, I've never seen that done in an inspirational speech. It's usually like they're inspirational all the way through. In this one, it was more realistic. It was like he tried and he couldn't do enough of it. And then he got encouragement from Andor, and then he's like, found the words, right? It was beautiful, man. Oh god, I love that.
And this is emotion, so like his facial expressions in that speech, like just staring at him. First he's like kind of nervous, and then he just flips to his anger, like, yo, they killed 100 of us. Like,
yes,
like you could feel the emotion. Like, just outstanding performance here.
And I love it, because like the first thing you hear him say, like, I'm almost out, and then he goes into that thing like, we're never getting out of here.
No, he's like, this is our best shot, right? And like, when he says it, people really believe him. But like, the way the camera zooms on his face, though, like, you can see like every flinch in his like freaking, like, that guy does, like, you know, every wrinkle in his forehead is like there with like purpose. It's like so wild how good his facial expressions are. And that's amazing.
That's been probably my favorite thing about the cinematography of the show, is that it's not like these wide cinematic shots.
Yeah,
it's these personal up close, and it's like you're standing right next to him with Cassian.
Yeah,
and then like my favorite thing also when we're going to the control room is like, because you always hear the controller voice has been this robotics thing, but it's just being a guy behind a dub mic.
It's just a scrawny
white guy behind a modularized you see on these social media. It's like,
That's really funny. And the other thing is, like, the way he gave up his homie so fast. They, oh, I don't control the water generation, but he does. He gave up. Right, like...
the guy in charge is like, don't give up anything. And the guys just look at each other. You're like, no, we're being shot at. No.
Yeah. And then we see like the other soldiers like hiding in a corner. They're really scared. It was really interesting to see, and I thought that was really, really cool.
My favorite thing is about, like, because they give you, the guards can project so much confidence and security,
right,
when handling the presidents when we see them. And then as soon as that the floor, the one thing keeping them in power, is gone, they lose all sense of security. And
they cower so quick. It was hilarious. Like, single guard was like, oh, wait a second, it's 49 on 12.
Yep. And Andy Serkis's Captain America speech didn't help, because they were like, oh crap, now he's got everyone riled up.
Right. Like, the moment that one guy just put his feet on the ground, he trusted him. He's like, oh, this is happening. And then every rebel immediately knew, was like, no, well, like, now let's go. Let's go, all of us. Let's go.
This is one of my favorite prison breaks of like
go ahead. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, as a TV trope, like whenever they do prison breaks and stuff, this is one of my top 10, like easily.
Easily.
I love the design of the prison too.
Yeah.
It's like one of the best prison designs ever. Cause it takes like, so, I can't remember the name of the prison, but you see it almost in every like this dystopian or authoritarian design. Cause it is more like, it's sense of controlling where prisoners are on the outside. And then the guards are in the inside so they can see everything. But the way it's like the prisoners are only connected by these main tiny archways and walkways to the, and so it's like it's more controlled than just the guards seeing them. It's the controlling how they move about.
Yeah. The other thing is that I didn't know that the prison was like in the middle of like the ocean. I had no idea. I didn't know that's where it was.
Oh, I think they showed a shot of that when they first got there. Yeah.
I must have forgotten. I must have forgotten that they were on an island because like I had no idea. And that shot of them leaving, as you can see them swimming and then it pulls up and you can see like they're like, oh, they escaped from like three sides. You're like, oh, that's such a beautiful shot.
I have expected a Star Wars Jaws to come up at the prisoners and they start swimming. It's like they're starting to swim and it's like
yeah. But listen, let's get to the sad part. Let's get to the sad part. Cause when they turn to Andy Serkis and he goes, I can't swim, yo, my heart dropped. My heart just dropped.
I wanted to cry, man.
And the fact that like they pushed him over, he couldn't even help him. He's like you know, you can't swim. Let me grab him and like help him. I don't know. I'm not a lifeguard, but like, I'm sure like somebody could have helped him. Like somebody could have done it.
Yeah, no. I mean, I was a Boy Scout, so I was saved in. I one of my merit badges was life saving, and so he could have, if Cassian jumped with him or been able to. Pick him out as he jumped, he would have been able to swim with him to shore.
System. Like get two or three guys to be like right next to them, you know, like
just doggy paddle and like, you know, you'll get there.
And especially since he was the one who's telling people not to leave anyone behind.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh man, it was sad. He did say that he was like, listen, if somebody falls down, pick them up, help each other, right? And then he was the one that got left behind, which we don't know though. Maybe he's got to survive.
Well, like, I saw a tweet. I don't know. I have to go back and see the source, but it looked like one of the writers or someone said we don't see him actually die.
We don't. Okay, we don't actually see him die.
Okay.
So is he dead? Of course.
We don't know. Yeah. That scene really did make me cry because like when you're listening to that speech and how inspirational it is and how he says like, you know, there's only one way out.
Yeah.
And then he knows he can't swim at that moment. Like he knows he can't swim in that speech. It just made it hit so much more. Like,
yeah, swimming is a life skill. Everybody should learn it. And like Muslim people do not know how to swim, especially
facts.
Muslim women.
I don't know how to swim.
Muslim women especially, right? Because there's not a safe place for them to learn how to swim. So listen, do yourself a favor, learn to swim. It could save your life.
Mm-hmm. I know how to float. I took a couple swimming classes back in the day. I do not know how to swim.
I learned to swim from polar bears. I was watching the Discovery Channel. I'm like, these fat motherfuckers can do it. I can do it.
if you can float, you can swim. It's just you don't have to have a perfect technique. You keep your head above water.
It'll take me a minute to like figure out how to kick my legs and eventually start like slowly moving. But that's enough to survive, which is good enough for me.
Yeah, no, doggy paddling is easy. That's super easy. You're basically just crawling in water, and if you keep your head above water, like you'll get there slowly, but you'll get there
eventually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So enough about life-saving techniques. Let's talk about, you know what I want to talk about real quick before we get into the big stuff. I want to talk about how Mothma was in the negotiating about this little bank situation, and this guy comes up. And he's like, no, I don't want your money. And she's like, well, I don't really want to owe you a favor. And she's like, no, I just want to be invited back with my eligible son. I did not see that coming. That came out of nowhere. This is like,
bro,
a Hollywood movie now.
Nice auntie right there. Like,
this is some Rista shit. This is wild. I was like, when did this happen? This show gives you everything.
It does. And I love that so much.
It's, oh man, So basically, she's from this culture that where they do like arranged marriages, because apparently her husband and her have some kind of arranged marriage too. Because you can see they like respect each other, but they don't really love each other, is what it feels like. And for every episode, they've been hyping up like her daughter. Like for some reason, they keep showing her daughter. They keep showing the relationship. It's a little like fragile, and you don't know why. And now you see this, and you're like, oh. Now it all comes together. Now we know why they kept showing the daughter. Now they know why they kept showing her relationship with her being a little conflicted. And now she has to decide if she wants to do this for her daughter or risk being found out and the money not being laundered, all that stuff. Jazz, what are your thoughts?
I mean, it's a tough place for a politician. Like it's like, I mean... Lay out this hits close to home, because like my family's almost in a situation like this. Like my mom was, you know, she did have an arranged marriage, and it was between her initial suitors were like three guys, but they were like close to my grandpa. And then he, because my grandpa knew he was gonna like cause a fight with everybody, he married my mom off to my dad. And he was like the random guy from, you know, from Malaria. And I was like, how did this happen? Well, that's what it was. It was like a situation like that, right? But then now I'm seeing this and I'm like, oh my God, the politics of this. This is real. Like, this is close to my home. Like, I've never seen a portrayal like this on TV. This is cool.
I never thought I would see a Rista on Star Wars. That just came out of nowhere, bro.
Right? Like, it's close to home there.
My thing about it is like, the criminal underworld guy kept talking about the affluence of it. Like, he kept saying that this is a tradition because of our status,
right?
And so it gave us an insight into Tendrillian culture that I didn't know we would get, because we got the little blurb that she was married off at 16. One author herself. I'm like, okay. But now, like, we know that it's specifically because she has a certain status and her family has a certain status within Tendrillian society. And so, like, it's just another thing. Like, Mon Mothma, we never see what she has to sacrifice in any of the Star Wars movies. And now we're seeing that she has this whole system and family that she has to decide what is more important, her values or her family.
No, that's true. And we see that like a lot of her money is tied up in like this family money that she has, but the old full the money that she's laundering. She is using her influence, her riches, everything for this rebellion. And you can, now she has come to the point where like she has sacrificed so much. And now she may even have to sacrifice her daughter, which is huge, bro. That's huge. That's just to go to you, like, how important this rebellion was and how many sacrifices were required to make this rebellion happen. It's not just, like, one family having, a discussion. It's not the Skywalkers and the Solos, right? It's, like, the real people had to make a lot of sacrifices to make this rebellion happen. And I'm glad we get to see that. It's really cool.
It's kind of great because it feels like the Skywalkers just blundered into everything now.
They just
stumbled and like, instead of like Anakin like caused the mess, but like every other Skywalker just kind of just bumbled out on with in the waves that impacted, and they just happened to be where the Force needed them to be.
Exactly.
There's too much plot armor with them, but with this,
like, with this, right,
like how delicate the balance is, right? If one thing here went wrong, we wouldn't have any of Star Wars. Like,
no,
everything hinges on every action in this show, and it's just so fascinating to see how they're making it all work.
Speaking of like sacrificing, man, a sacrifice that I didn't know was happening was homeboy Lonnie out here making the sacrifices. We learned about him and I fell in love with him. And then like, I felt so bad for him in the same breath. I was just like,
the way they're characterizing the ISB is my favorite thing about this show, because ISB, when you see it in any other media just feels like a security force. They're just there. They're just walking out. We know, you know, that there are some SS type organization, but you don't really feel it because they're in the shadows or they're just on the side, and they come in to give plot motivations and stuff, especially in Thrawn. Mm-hmm. But like now you're seeing just how much they're interweaved into everything. Yeah. And what's with fascists and trench coats? Because
it's a vibe. It's a vibe.
They're always wearing trench coats.
Yeah. Like,
trench coats just look so official, bro.
Yeah, it's like, it's because when you walk in wearing that trench coat, I'm like, oh, something is gonna happen. Something was happening. And they're all watching that monitor, and they're so attentive and fixated on everything. And then we get this turncoat or the spy with inside the ISB, which is supposed to be independent. It is the security, the Secret Service of it. They're supposed to be seal proof. And then Luthien got someone inside.
Yeah, it's really interesting because you really get to learn about how the grooming of it worked, right? Like, they got him in there, they groomed him, they set him up for this position, but they also sacrifice a lot of intel to get him where he is. That means, like, this whole time, Luthien's been, like, doing these little spy runs, but also betraying his own people just to get this guy higher up the ranks. Like, they've been feeding this guy information so he can tell on them, so he can go up the ranks. And Luthien's just been, like, sacrificing his own people over and over again in these little small things. And now he's going to do it again to Krieger. And I'm just like, we really find out that, like, Luthien is, like, in his own right, a villain. Like, he's crazy.
This is the Turing Project all over again.
This is Machiavellian, right? Like, this is wild.
I remember the Turing Project, the Allies did figure out the code for the Axis, especially because they knew that the first sentence was the same every time. But then they had to always let, you know, them get away with sometimes killing their own people just so they don't tip off that they know everything.
Right.
Like, this was a really cool callback to that. I mean, Star Wars is based on a lot of history, so...
Yeah.
Like, this is fascinating to see how Luthien has to play this role here.
It's so wild, right? And, like, a lot of it is making me think, like, you know, this is how, like, terrorists think in the world, right? And that's just, like, their mindset. And they're just like, I don't care how many people we got to kill. We have this mission, and we got to do it. The rebels are essentially getting closer and closer to being like terrorists in this show. And, like, I'm glad that they're showing that. It makes it less clear-cut. It makes it more, like, I don't know. It's just, like, complex and complicated.
Yeah, no, because, like, in Rogue One, when Cassian says, "I've done terrible things in the name of the rebellion," you're like, at first you're like, "How the rebellion's a good thing? How can they do terrible things?" And I'm like, and we know Saw is an anarchist, so yeah, so that makes sense. What he does, but like, how can the rebellion? But now we see it, and it's like, Luthien has become my favorite character of the show besides Cassian.
Yeah, for sure.
But, like, the acting, bro, his acting when he stood there and goes, like, what have I sacrificed? Everything! And then he just, like, lists all these things. Like, yo, like, I know Andy Serkis did an amazing job, but, like, to get two performances like that in one show, like, what is this?
You thought Andy Serkis' performance was good? Hold up, just hold my beer. Let me show you, like...
hold my blue milk.
Hold my blue milk, right? Yeah. Like, let's go.
It felt like Luthien was like, I'm a huge musical fan, and my favorite musical is Les Mis. Mm-hmm. I felt like Luthien was Javert.
Yep.
When he's doing his soliloquies.
And his soliloquy was amazing. Where he goes like, what do you factor? He goes like, calm, kindness, kingship, love, my inner peace. I was like, no shit, bro. Keep going, bro. Keep going. It was so good. It was so good. I want to read off some of these comments. He goes like, I have wiped my mind of a sunless place. Like, that is a beautiful quote. That is a beautiful line. I'm damned for what I do. I yearn to be a savior of injustice. Savior for Injustice, but without contemplating the cost. Like, he knows all his flaws. He's like, I accepted it, man. I accepted it a long time ago. I am damned for this. I'm going to hell. But mm-hmm. We need to do this. There's no other stuff. And then he says, like, he is not going to be able to see the sunrise. Like, I burned my life for a sunrise I'll never know. That is another amazing line.
That's beautiful. That's my favorite line in this whole show. Especially since.
And I was going to say one more line I have to go out before I'll give it to you guys. The tools of my enemies is what I have to use to defeat them. Bro.
Yeah. Woof. He has to go to the dark side.
Bro, so good. So good, yeah. Man.
Oh, man. Pat, what were you saying?
So the sunset... The sunrise is my favorite thing because if you watch Rogue One, again, I love the connections to Rogue One.
I know, it's such a good
movie. Oh my god, you're right.
The sunrise, yes.
The blast from the Death Star on Scarif forces a sunset type mm-hmm. background as Cassian and Jyn are kneeling there. And Cassian never sees the sunrise of what Luthien set him on, the path Luthien set him on.
Ooh.
I know, it's so emotionally charged. Like, even now I'm getting goosebumps by this whole sequence. Like, it's so beautiful.
It was so beautiful. That was so well written. That was so well acted. Like, it's one thing to just have, like, a scene well written. Another one to be well written and well acted. Like,
And the chef's music. Kiss. The music, yes. Cinematography, just everything.
The cinematography,
about this
the
show.
Lighting, it was so good. Like, you really felt like, no, let this poor guy live his life. But then you're like, no, he kind of needs to stay. Like, I kind of see your point. Like, and this guy just feeling trapped. He wants to go live with his wife and his daughter.
Oh, like the rebel spy. Yeah. Like, oh my God. Like, so, like, so powerful.
Like, I kind of see Luthien's point. And the reason I feel for Luthien so much is because we already have seen the destination. We know it works, right? So, like honestly, I don't know if I would be on his side if I didn't know. I'd be like, yo, you're doing too much for something that might not happen. But we know it happens. And we know it happens because of all these sacrifices that he made, which makes this show so complicated and complex, but so beautiful at the same time.
Asking the hard questions of your morality here.
And I love it because it really drives George Lucas' original message with the original trilogy. Because it was all about the Viet Cong in the U.S.
Right.
And which is really the worst thing. And I have a book that I'm reading called Ho Chi Minh and the OSS, which was the CIA's predecessor. It's what turned into... The CIA after World War II, and so the OSS was America's CIA, and we went in during World War II and set up Ho Chi Minh's Viet Cong. We trained them, we gave him, because they were trying to fight for their rights, fight for their democracy, democratic freedom from colonizers, the French,
right,
and also the Japanese who colonized on top of the French colonizing. And so it's a whole complicated ethics and moral section there with the Viet Cong. And so then when it comes time for democratic elections, the U.S. says, no, we're canceling them because you guys are you guys go a different route of democratic thinking than we like, even though technically the Democratic Party is a little more corrupt than what Ho Chi Minh's party was forming. And so, they are labeled as communists, the Viet Cong is painted throughout all American history as being villains and evil, and they're demonized. When they're just fighting, they're doing whatever it takes, like Luthien, to fight for their home.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know, man. This episode, this show, one of the things that I really like about the show is that it's not one of those shows that just give you like action after action. It leads up to it. It makes you earn it, right? And like ever since like the Aldani, Heist, it's just been upping the game. Every episode just gets better and better and upping the heights and the stakes, and it's just really, really good. And I was like, last episode, I thought it was amazing. And I was like, there's no way they're going to top that. I watched this episode, I'm like, whoa, this is
they
amazing.
Topped like three times separately.
There's so many times where I'm like, they're not going to top this episode, and they keep doing it. Like, yeah. It's just so good.
It makes me so excited for the finale of the season.
I know! Two more episodes!
I feel like the finale is going to have a huge cliffhanger, which is going to leave us a little bit unsatisfied.
And
because but it's going to make us yearn for season two a lot more.
I think it's gonna be the right cliffhanger.
Yeah,
like we are somewhat satisfied, but we want more after that, because season two is not coming out till 2024. So
then they got to give us something satisfying, because this
right, like they're not gonna leave us on something unsatisfying for 2 years. It's gonna be satisfying end, but also more. Yeah, leave us on red.
Yeah, listen, it's hard to top these episodes because they're so good, but this is definitely one of the best Star Wars content out there. It's probably the best.
I'm convinced each episode is just going to top up the previous one all the way through now.
There's two left. There's only two left, right?
For the season, yes. And I think they're still going to be amazing. They're just going to keep one-upping every episode behind it.
Because I'm excited now, because now Cassian has a partner for everything he does, because that fellow prisoner that was on his group.
Yeah, he's very familiar, isn't he?
And now we get to see that they have a relationship, and all my mutuals and all the people I know who are watching this show have been saying that we're giving side characters throughout Star Wars, and now they're doing what the books have always in this show what the books have always done is they're giving relationships and they're giving backgrounds to these characters, and so now when we see. I can't remember the character's name. I have to look up the name now.
I don't remember their name, but I know he was in Rogue One, and I know like we see him escaping with Andor at the very end, and I'm excited to see, because Andor is definitely hey, I'm solo kind of guy. He's like, hey, I need you guys help to break out of jail, but after that, you're on your own, right? I don't think that's gonna happen. I think him and this guy are going to become best buds, and we're gonna get to see that. And then I'm gonna rewatch Rogue One and be so sad when I see them again.
Because he's on Scarif with Andor, he follows him all the way to Scarif.
Mm-hmm. Oh, till the end of the line, man. I'm with you till the end of the line. That's some Captain America shit right there, man. Oh, so good, so good. All right, before we go, is there any last things you want to see? Anything else we didn't cover on this episode?
Any theories? Anything else?
I don't know what's next, because it didn't leave us. Like, I don't know where they end up. I don't know what happens. I'm kind of like last episode, I'm like, okay, my theory is they're going to break out of jail. They're going to do this, or Andy Serkis is going to be with them. After this episode, I feel like we need a new plot line for Andor, like, because Luthen stuff is still going on. Mothma stuff is still going on. But does Andor go back to his mama?
They keep showing us Ferrix, and it's a quick sequence that we go back to Ferrix in this episode, and one of the community members talking to either a stormtrooper or an imperial officer talking about Marva and her pills.
Yeah, we saw
she's
that.
Sick. She's sick. Sick.
Marva. Marva's going to do something big, because I don't think she's frail. She doesn't.
No. She's planning something. She's got some ideas. I'm excited to see what's next. That's the end of our episode. Pat, thank you so much for joining us, man. We had a great time. Hope to see you more in the comments. You're always putting some great comments and some great jokes. Jazz, anything you want to say before we go?
Man, I'm just like fascinated. Like, he's a history teacher. Like, Pat is a history teacher, right?
Yeah.
And then he's explaining all his connections. Like, yeah, we got to bring this guy back on at some point. Like, this is cool.
I love the history aspect of it. I love the politics of it. It's really, really cool. Pat, thank you for joining us. Let people know where they can find you.
So on this tag on the screen is my TikTok handle. I do a whole variety of contract. I have art series. I do graphic arts on the side. So I've been doing Star Wars inspired TikTok creators art, where I take people who do Star Wars content and put them into art themed after Star Wars. I do a bunch of cosplays. I throughout the whole House of Dragon thing, I have a Damian Targaryen cosplay there. I'm currently making Blackfyre Dark Sister to go along with
it. Okay, got it. Okay.
Yeah, and then I do I have a series where I try and build up where I pretend to be an ISP agent, and it's just a daily grind.
That's fascinating.
While everything is going on, it's just him doing it.
That's so funny. All right, man. I have to check that out. That sounds really good. Well, thanks again for joining us.
For the audio users, that username is st.pat, St. Pat, _ separatist rebel, all spelled out.
And yeah. I'm also on Twitter. I'm trying to grow my following there on Twitter, and that's St. Pat, st.pat, no space, _ of stars.
Awesome. Okay. Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. And guys, until next time, salam, nerds.
Peace.